Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wildes, Greg Jennings is with us, and we got a big Tuesday morning show for you. It is Tua versus the field. Wildes is on board with the new Patriot way, and Nick and I have something in common that is definitely going to surprise you. But we have to start in the NFL this morning. The draft is now just 23 days away. One of the biggest questions surrounds Tua Tagovailoa. Tua coming off a hip injury after a slew of other injuries. But according to Tua's agents, he is fully cleared and ready to compete without any restrictions. Nick, let's kick off the conversation with you. How comfortable should teams be drafting Tua at this point?
As comfortable as you can be drafting any quarterback in the top 10. Here's one of the reasons I'm seemingly so pro Tua compared to some of my colleagues in the media is because I remember, and maybe other people don't, that every top 10 quarterback since Peyton Manning, since Andrew Luck, the better part of a decade, has had major red flags. Every single one of them. Kyler Murray would have been the shortest starting quarterback in NFL history. The same year, Daniel Jones. You've never seen a top 10 quarterback with that collegiate statistical profile pan out. The year before, Baker had height issues and character judgment issues. Obviously, in Wyoming's quarterback, Josh Allen, pardon me, he had awful collegiate numbers. Mitch Trubisky was a one-year wonder. Patrick Mahomes was too much of a make-it-happen quarterback in both directions, and his team barely won half of the games he started. Go up and down the list. Blake Bortles, everything about him was a question mark. There aren't these sure things. This idea that Tua is more of a risk than your traditional top 10 pick, the safest top 10 pick in the last decade, post-Andrew Luck, Wildes, is Sam Darnold. And even Darnold had question marks because of the turnovers his final year at USC. So I just don't buy that Tua is in a special category by himself because of the injury question marks, Kevin, because all of the top 10 quarterbacks have major question marks.
Yeah, Nick, I think he's a little bit riskier than you might. But my advice to all GMs out there is fortune favors the bold. And to be a little bit simpler, don't be a wimp. Just don't be a wimp. At some point, you're going to be on a Zoom call with your front office, and the two words are going to come out. We're scared. You're going to be scared of his hip. You're going to be scared of the prognosis. You're going to be scared if he gets hit. You're going to be scared that you haven't had enough time with him. Don't be scared. It's pretty easy. Don't be scared. Because if you want to talk yourself out of Tua, you easily can. In the article that came out yesterday, they said they hadn't even seen hip dislocations like that on the football field because they're mostly car accidents. So if you want to be scared, you can be scared. But look, it reminds me of Steph Curry. So everyone that watched the tournament knew that Steph was amazing. But then you started to read. Okay, his game won't translate. He's got bad shot selection. He's not a true point guard. He's got a frail frame. And then what happens? They draft Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn. And you passed on a franchise-making player because you got scared and you weren't bold. So my advice, Jenna, is to all GMs, do not be scared. Draft Tua.
Listen, I think when it comes to injury, though, it's a little bit different than you're questioning his height or his hand size or his athletic ability and whatnot. Remember Sam Bradford? Remember, he barely played his last year. He had terrible shoulder injuries coming out of Oklahoma. He was still taken number one by the Rams. I guess, Greg, my question is, if teams believe in the talent, why not just take him since everything else seems to be a crapshoot, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, Jenna, I think you make a better point than Nick even made with his comparisons of non-injury risks with Sam Bradford. And I think the number one thing teams have to consider is what they could potentially get. When it came to Sam Bradford, there weren't a lot of other quarterbacks available, and he was the obviously best available. Now, you look at this draft, you have Joe Burrow, you have all these other guys, CeeDee Lamb, you have Chase Young, obviously. You have other options that you could potentially get if you're in that position. and you look at Tua and what he provides, and is it exciting? Of course, but there will always be those general managers, Kevin, to your point, that will be scared, and owners that will be scared and try to err on the side of caution. And I agree with you, possibly for the first or second time, Kevin, they should not be. High risk, high reward. He's a wild card. And in most decks, the wild card is the most important card and the most elusive, most exciting. Everybody is after it. Everybody's looking at their hand the moment they flip their cards over and saying, oh, shoot, I got a wild card. Good. Great. It's a great thing to have. And so I love everything about Tua. The reason why a lot of teams are going to be a little leery is because they can't send their medical staffs to him, and he can't come to their clubs and their organizations and their buildings for their medical staffs to assess them. Teams like to have their personnel look at players, scout players, view players themselves, as well as their medical team assess players. And that can't happen right now.
I apologize, Jeanette. Just before we move on to where he could go, I'm just curious to the group. Why is one red flag different than the other? Why is a guy, we know how good he is. We know how talented he is. There is a concern about his health. Why is that scarier than a guy like Daniel Jones or Josh Allen or Mitch Trubisky, who it's like, well, they're big and strong and healthy, but we don't know if they're actually any good? Or a guy like Kyler Murray, who it's like, well, we know what he accomplished at the collegiate level, but we've literally never seen someone his size do it at the professional level. I don't understand why we're acting like the medical issue is so much different or so much worse than the others, when whether a guy can't play for you because he's hurt or whether he can't play for you because he stinks, either way, he can't play for you. So to me, all the red flags go in the same bucket, and we don't have a perfect prospect. Not since Luck, and it turns out even with Luck, he played 7 years and said, I've had enough of this. So I just don't know that I buy that Tua should be evaluated differently. The question with Joe Burrow is, why was he good for 1 year? Now, he was great for 1 year, but it was 1 year. Like, I just don't buy that Tua should be in a special class by himself, Jenna.
And now this sits in every GM's lap who has a chance to move up and grab Tua. Do you get him or not? A red flag is a red flag is a red flag. So, Nick, let me just throw it back to you quickly. Where do you think he ends up? Who's going to take a chance on him?
Well, he's not going to get past Miami. Miami would absolutely love if they can sit there at 5 and take him. But the question is, Washington, are they going to abandon Haskins, take Tua at 2? Are they going to trade out of the pick at 3? Detroit, does Matt Patricia feel the pressure to win right now, try to alleviate some of that pressure by saying, we've drafted the quarterback of the future? We know the Giants at 4 won't take him. But Wilds, could the Chargers try to jump in front of Miami and trade with the Giants if he's still there? There is no chance, in my mind, Kevin, he goes past 5 if the Dolphins are sitting there at 5. The question is, does he go 2, 3, 4 because a team trades up to get in front of Miami? To me, that's the real intrigue of this top 5 of the draft.
Yeah, you know, it's like what we talked about the other day. I do not, as a Patriots fan, I do not want to see Tua in the division. So I hope he goes to, I don't know, the Redskins, I guess.
Anywhere else. Welcome back to First Things First. Time now for But First, sponsored by Delta Faucet. Patriots fullback Dan Vitale, one of many, up to the latest challenge going around the internet. Ready for this? 1,000 push-ups an hour. That's about 17 push-ups a minute. And Nick, for 4... You poke fun at me for bragging that I can do this. I cannot do this. But you know who else cannot do this? You. But we'll let our audience in on a little secret. You've been working out, trying to buff up just a little bit in your quarantine time. You're working yourself up not to 1,000, 150. Right, my friend? And guess what? You and I have a lot in common because I'm right there with you. 150.
Well, okay. First of all, Jenna Wolf, let me compliment you. Not for your physique, which is always impressive, but... because you were honest here. Total upset. Biggest upset of the week. Jenna Wolf didn't say I can do 1,000 push-ups in an hour. I would have lost an enormous amount of money on that. Now, about me, I thought it was impressive I was trying to do 1,000 push-ups in a week after not working out since, well, ever. And that's what I've been doing during quarantine. But Greg Jennings, we know, works out. Because Greg Jennings, the only videos you can find of him are him playing in the NFL and then him shirtless on the internet cooking and giving life advice. So Greg Jennings, I challenge you, sir, to the 1,000 push-up in an hour challenge, which strikes me as impossible. But if anyone can do it, you can do it. Greg, do you accept the challenge?
Boy, that is peer pressure if I ever felt peer pressure in my life. But I don't get pushed into a corner. And because I know the importance of executing a perfect push-up from 1 to 1,000, Jenna, am I right? Yes, I know I am. I wouldn't even accept that challenge. I wouldn't even accept that challenge. Just may send something special to you and only you, so then you can show it to the world. Myself doing 1,000 push-ups in 35 minutes.
Okay. No, that 35 minutes. Okay. You a damn lie. This is impossible. Now you sounded like Jenna Wolf. I can do 1,000 burpees in the commercial break. Now it's just the lies and lies.
All right. Well, listen, kudos to those pro athletes, yourself included, who can. For if this sure. was burpees, I'm up for the challenge. Let's move on quickly before Nick starts poking fun again. Time to play a little drawing to blank. According to our guys at Fox Sports, Fox Bets, Joe Burrow is the odds favorite to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, with Georgia running back DeAndre Swift and Tua Tagovailoa behind him. All right, Nick, Burrow being the runaway favorite to win Rookie of the Year is blank.
A bad bet. If you're going to make this bet with my friends at Fox Bet, which is, of course, where you should make it, you don't have good enough odds on Joe Burrow. We know he's going to a bad team in a bad situation. How about Jonathan Taylor, stud running back out of the University of Wisconsin? I would anticipate he comes into the league immediately, is a 300 carry back. We saw how great he was at Wisconsin. We know that running backs in recent history as rookies have stepped in immediately, Greg, and made an impact. And you get, I think, 10-1 on him right now with Fox Bet. So I say Jonathan Taylor. So I think Joe Burrow, Greg, would be a bad bet.
Yeah, I think it would be premature, obviously, because of the situation that he's going into and the dysfunction that we've seen with the Cincinnati Bengals. My pick would be a running back. You could take Jonathan Stewart. I like that pick, Nick. I like DeAndre Swift. And I also like J.K. Dobbins, depending on where he ends up. I think running backs are so invaluable because they can run and they obviously can catch out of the backfield now as receivers do. So they have greater opportunities.
Nick, I loved your pick. Go Badgers. I'm going to say Joe Burrow is a little Danny Almonte-esque. Like, part of me wonders, and I know I don't want to like put a firebomb out there, but like, is the reason that he was so good for 1 year is because he was just older than everybody? He's going to be 20, or he is 23, and he turned 23 in December. He's older than Kyler Murray. He's older than Lamar Jackson. So I'm just a little bit wary of the Joe Burrow hype machine.
All right, let's move on to the Patriots now. Many wondered if the Patriot way left New England when Tom Brady left New England. Well, Patriots veteran Matthew Slater gave a resounding no yesterday, saying, quote, "That standard doesn't change." That standard, 6 Lombardis in the last 20 years. Nick Wright, the Patriots' Super Bowl chances without Brady are blank.
Oh, Matthew Slater's right, but I think for the wrong reasons. The Super Bowl chances without Tom Brady are unchanged from where they were last year with Tom Brady, great. Right around 0%. Like, yeah, I mean, listen, with or without Tom Brady in the 2019 or the 2020 season, the New England Patriots were drawing dead to win the Super Bowl. As good as the defense is in a conference when you got to get through Watson and Lamar and, of course, Patrick Mahomes, you ain't going to do it either whether you're doing it with a senior citizen or whether you're doing it with Jared Stidham. So they're unchanged. They can't win the Super Bowl. Greg?
This is too much.
Wow, senior citizen. I'm saying unlikely. And for the same reasons, Nick, they just have too many uphill battles to climb over. And I just don't think they're going to be able to do it with starting with the guy that's sitting behind you, Nick, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. They're just the favorite. They should be the favorite. And it really has nothing to do with Tom Brady not being there.
All right. Here's what they are. Tyson-esque. Imagine if you were had a deal to fight Mike Tyson. And he's got a left hand and he's got a right hand. And your manager comes and said, good news, we made a deal with Mike Tyson. He's only going to fight with his left hand. You're like, oh, I guess that's a good sign. I'm still in a lot of trouble. Well, that's exactly how you should be thinking about the New England Patriots. We had Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. We lost one, but guess what? This one can still do a lot of damage. It's unchanged. Patriots to the Super Bowl again.
Cheers. Which hand is Belichick?
Great take. My favorite
it's a
one.
A great take.
Yet. Cheers. Right back to you. All right. Speaking of Brady, according to Tampa Bay's GM, Jason Light, Brady actually pitched himself to the team during free agency. So, Nick, Brady pitching himself to the Bucs is blank.
Unbelievable. And I mean that in the literal sense, as in, I do not believe it. To me, this is an un-believable story. The idea that Tom Brady was like, hi, Jason Light and Bruce Arians, who has done everything except for, you know, pack Jameis Winston's bags for him. Do you think maybe, possibly, potentially, I don't know, I could come play for your football organization? And they were like, I don't know, Tom, what have you done lately? It's nonsense. I don't believe it. It's a nice story, but it's not a believable story. So, Greg, I call it unbelievable.
I call it defining, and I do believe it. And I think it defines exactly where Tom Brady is in his career. People identifying and labeling him as pretty much done. It's over, falling off the cliff. And he wanted to put it in his own words and not have anyone speak for him. I think that says and speaks a lot about him. And it was a very defining moment. And he wanted to write the rest of his script. He wanted to converse and convey his message the way he wanted it to come across to general managers. And that's what he was able to do. And we see it worked.
I agree. Jenna, I'm going to say it's a sign of a true champion. Something that, Nick, once you're a quarterback, six championships, I think that you would be more have a better understanding of what it's like to see a true champion in action. He's enthusiastic. He's hungry. He's humble. He wants to be a part of Tampa Bay. I was just very impressed with this entire story.
Of course you were.
Unbelievable.
On to the Texans now. When they traded All-Pro wideout DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals, Houston's head coach and GM Bill O'Brien took some blowback. And The Athletic took some notice, releasing an article titled, Bill O'Brien Could Already Be the Worst GM Ever. Gotta wonder what the article's about. Nick, Bill O'Brien as the Texans GM is blank.
Fascinating, because it could be also groundbreaking, because the worst GMs in sports history almost are disproportionately NBA GMs. You have David Kahn, who Wilds alluded to earlier, taking two point guards ahead of Steph Curry. You have Jenna's guy, Kevin McHale, who thought he was working for the Celtics when he was actually working for the Timberwolves and gave them Kevin Garnett.
Easy.
You have the second or third greatest player. You have the second or third greatest player ever, Michael Jordan, who, you know, who's been running Charlotte into the ground for the better part of 10 years. And another great player, Elgin Baylor, his time with the Clippers. But the worst GM ever is Ted Stepien in the NBA. Why? Because they had to make a rule about him trading away first-round picks to where you can't do it in back-to-back years because he kept giving them away, called the Stepien rule. Could we have a Bill O'Brien rule coming? Stop trading for running backs. Stop trading multiple picks for above-average left tackles. Stop giving away the best players on your team for mid-round picks. Could a Bill O'Brien rule be in the works a la Ted Stepien rule in the NBA? So I call it fascinating. Can't wait to see how this plays out. I just feel terribly for Deshaun Watson, Greg.
which is why I say it's prohibiting. It's prohibiting not only for the Texans fans, but for us as media, potentially being able to see Deshaun Watson be what we've seen Lamar Jackson become, which is an MVP, Patrick Mahomes become, which is an MVP. I don't know if it happens if he stays in the Texans uniform, and it's typically, or I shouldn't say typically, and it's primarily because of Bill O'Brien. So he's prohibiting us from seeing the extreme excellence of Deshaun Watson and potential hoist of a Lombardi trophy.
All right, Kev.
Bill O'Brien used to be the Patriots offensive coordinator. And today's your daily reminder, Nick, that Sportsbook has Deshaun Watson starting for the Patriots in 2021. You can get those odds. So part of me thinks Bill O'Brien's still working for the Pats. Excited to see Deshaun Watson
Kevin,
to
like
Gillette.
Kevin McHale. That'd be such a nice departure for a Boston team that things outside of the rules. It'd just be shocking if a Boston team got caught up in a little bit of, you know, scandal, subterfuge, palace intrigue. That's great. That's just great. Jenna, this segment
price of winning.
Kevin, in the next commercial break.
It's so irritating.
Next break, Kevin, you're going to have to let me know who you root for in the NFL, because I think people are going to have a hard time figuring it out. Back here, first things first, talking a little Tom Brady. Most people who watched Brady compete last season didn't see the usual play of this six-time Super Bowl champ. Not Bucks GM Jason Light. He saw vintage Brady, saying, quote, "The tape to us showed that he had plenty of arm." So, Nick, what's more likely for Brady this season in Tampa Bay? MVP-level season or he might struggle mightily season?
Well, if those are the only two doors I can walk through, then every person with a brain will walk through that he'll struggle mightily. Now, it probably is going to be somewhere in the middle, but like, can we just show Tom Brady's play over the last 4 years instead of that carefully manicured highlight clip? You buying that stuff at age 43? Because I'm not. That shows a precipitous decline over the last two seasons, a gradual decline for over the last three seasons, and now one would imagine it's going to continue to trend in that direction. So, Kevin, if the only options available to me are Tom Brady all of a sudden has that line graph shoot all the way back up to 2017 MVP level, or it continues down to where he would be struggling mightily, of course I'm going to say it's more likely that he struggles mightily.
Well, I'm trying to think about how the Bruce Arians factor weighs into this. I actually think Tom Brady is going to make Bruce Arians a much better coach. So he'll do this by pulling the weeds on his offense. When you look at turnover-worthy plays, since 2006, Jameis had 40 last year. Carson Palmer had 40 in 2013. Andrew Luck had 40 in 2012. Those were all in their first year of Arians. Now, I think Tom Brady is going to be more like a starting pitcher in baseball. He's going to look at this play and be like, nope. And then look at another play like, nope. He's going to take a few of those plays and throw them in the garbage. And he'll keep the good Arians plays and throw the bad ones away. And that could give like a Jameis-esque season without any of the turnovers. Greg, are you buying that at all?
I'm buying it to a degree. I think he's going to fall somewhere in the middle.
Great. But thanks, Greg.
If I had to pick, I would say he's going to err closer to an MVP level. And the reason why is simply because of the weapons around him and the opportunities that he's going to be afforded. When you are a player that's been counted out and you have had success, it's hard to literally eliminate the will of a champion and to say that they won't be able to succeed and what they won't do and they will struggle mightily. And so for me to sit here and say Tom Brady will struggle mightily because what Nick, you showed, everything kind of trending down. Yeah, that might be the case. His level of play may not be at the highest of heights, but it may be just good enough for us to say Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a special team next year.
Can I just remind everyone that Jameis Winston was sacked 47 times last year. Brady likes to get the ball out early, so he's gonna be in for it with that offensive line. But listen, Bucks GM also went on to say, we feel like he could play for over 2 years for us. All we've heard from Brady is, I want to play till I'm 45. We haven't heard past that because it seems preposterous to think about. But, Nick, can Brady play more than 2 years for Tampa Bay?
Well, more than 2 years, whether it's for Tampa Bay or someone else, because this obviously is Kevin Wild's ultimate dream. Brady plays 2 years for Tampa and still has a lot left in the tank, and then signs for the age 45 season, his final victory lap around the NFL with the New England Patriots after they've had 2 years of Stidham or Hoyer, whomever they're going with. But again, if you're offering me two doors, one is that Brady gets another contract after this one, and the other is that Brady does not make it through this contract, then obviously door number two is the smarter bet. Like, what is more likely? That Brady in 2 years is good enough to still be a starting quarterback, as his goal is to play three more years in the NFL, or that after 1 year in Tampa, we're all looking around the room, and most importantly, Jason Light's looking around the room like, wait, it's all guaranteed for the year two? All of it? $25 million? Like, obviously, that's more likely. It's the same way, Wilds. Again, it's probably somewhere in the middle, but it's the same way if there's two doors. Brady's the best quarterback in a division with Breeze, Ryan, and Bridgewater, or Brady's the worst quarterback in a division with Breeze, Ryan, and Bridgewater. If it has to be one of those two doors, it is also door number two. I feel like all evidence points to that, Kevin Wilds.
Jenna, can I be totally honest? I have thought about him coming back to New England. Like, Brian Hoyer's been on the team 3 times. We brought back Ben Watson. So when I saw that he only signed for 2 years, he has a no trade clause, he's got you can't franchise him, I was like, maybe he'll come back. Maybe he could come back. I also want to take an opportunity, although I love Brady with all my heart and soul, playing past your 40 is really Warren Moon's thing. And I got a great stat from Dusty, our researcher. He said prior to 1996, no quarterback 40 or above has started 6 games. Since then, it's kind of like the norm. I think there's 13 quarterbacks have started. And then you've got right on the cusp, Philip Rivers, Big Ben, Aaron Rodgers says he wants to play till he's 40. So now it's like I could see Brady going further as there's a bunch of quarterbacks that just are turning 40 and keep playing.
Greg, you said and you talked about the will of a champion, and you can't take that out of someone. And if they've got the will to win, they're going to succeed. He doesn't have will in his arm. You know, he doesn't have will in his pliability and his durability. You know a lot about that. Yes. I mean, these are real legitimate issues to consider as you get older. I mean, no, quarterbacks, yeah, they're playing a little older, but 43, 44, 45. Now you're just, I mean, father time is not setting in. It has set in, no?
No, it's definitely setting in. It obviously has not set in because he's still out here playing and he's under contract with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. However, you have to take into consideration that you have linemen, you have receivers, you have running backs, you have all these other guys who are depending on you, but also who now you are depending on to make you better. And that's what Tom Brady is banking on. He's not going down to Tampa Bay with the same mentality that he had 10 years ago, saying, I'm the guy, put the ball in my hands, and I'll make everything right. No, these offensive linemen are going to take ownership. We're going to see some great play. We're going to see some poor play. But more than not, we're going to see them stepping up to the plate to make sure Tom Brady's uniform stays clean, because they understand, just like we do, he is older. He can't take those hits. We can't allow him to hit the ground. We can't allow him to hold on to the ball and be under duress every time he drops back. Now, some of that is going to be out of their hands to avoid, but for the most part, this is going to be the mentality of everyone across that roster, and specifically on that offensive side of the ball, is that we have to do whatever we can to make sure this works not only for Tom Brady, but for us, because we've never won. We haven't won. I'm not talking about the Bucs that did win. This team right now, this last 12 years, they have not experienced any amount of success, and they want it desperately. So I think they're going to do whatever it takes to make sure and to ensure Tom Brady is healthy and gives them that best chance.
Nick, quickly, even if that means changing Bruce Arians' system, right?
Well, yeah, I think there'll be adjustments, but I just, again, maybe I'm a prisoner of logic. Men typically don't get better at anything in their mid-40s. Like, there's not a thing guys typically do. It's like, you know when I was at my best? 46 years old. Nah, bruh. Like, you are in your 40s, you're typically trying to just maintain the level you achieved either in your late 20s or mid-30s, depending on what activity it is we're talking about here. So the idea that Brady is going to recapture his youth, I just don't see it under any offense, Bruce Arians or otherwise.
Back here, first things first, time for stories to start your morning. NFL owners are expected to approve an increased playoff field for the 2020 season today, expanding to 14 teams. Greg, what are your thoughts?
I like the expansion. I think, you know, when you play 16 games and you have an opportunity to get in, and we've seen so many teams who have the record or are second in their division and their record is better than another team that potentially will get in, and they are not allowed to get in because of the limitations on teams in. I don't mind it being that we add another team and just go with the one seed that gets the bye in both conferences. I don't mind it at all.
Tell you what, Nick, as a Patriots fan, that first playoff weekend was always like a nice time to relax, put my feet up and watch the Patriots have a bye as we started to think about the Super Bowl. With 13 byes, we never went to a Super Bowl without having a bye. As a Chiefs fan, I would be very nervous if one of those byes is gone and you guys are trying to create your little mini dynasty that's not going to happen, but I'd be extra nervous.
Wilds, I rarely say this, but you nailed it. People are focused on, to me,
oh, there we go,
side of this. People are focused on, are there going to be bad teams that make the playoffs? Usually the best team that misses the playoffs was a decent to pretty good team. That's not my concern. My concern is a totally selfish one. From people who are watching right now, which I guess is everyone I'm talking to, as they can see, I'm a fan of the best team in the league. But the best team in the league doesn't always have the best record in their conference, but they almost always have one of the two best records in their conference. A huge part of the Patriots' ability to make an unprecedented 8th consecutive conference championship games is that all 8 years they were the 1 or the 2 seed. So they had a bye. They only had to win one game to make the AFC title game. So if you're a fan of the Chiefs or of the Ravens, for example, I think at least temporarily this rule change will be a bummer to you because you expect to be one of the two best teams. If you're a fan of a mediocre team like Wilds is, the Patriots, you love it because you have a better chance of getting into the postseason. Jenna. True.
Shots fired.
Straight facts. Yeah.
On to some basketball now. Richard Jefferson.
Does she think shots fired is Yosemite Sam? Like he's out there shooting his guns?
Let's talk some basketball quickly. Richard Jefferson listed his 4 toughest NBA Finals opponents. In his opinion, number 1, according to him, was the 02 Lakers with Kobe and Shaq. Number 2 was the 2017 Warriors with KD and the Splash Brothers. At number 3, the 03 Spurs, Duncan and Robinson. And number 4 was the 2016 Warriors. What do you think of RJ's list, Nick?
With respect to my friend Richard Jefferson, who was a very good NBA player and has turned into an extraordinary broadcaster, this is the worst list I've ever seen. This is the worst list ever been compiled. Do you know how difficult it is to come up with a 4-item list and to have literally all 4 items in the wrong place? If you randomly placed them, the odds of getting all 4 wrong are more than 100-1. It's almost statistically impossible to get a list as bad as he got it. The accurate list is as follows. the toughest team Richard Jefferson ever faced in the finals with the 2017 Warriors, arguably the greatest offensive team of all time, and a team that was 15-0 in the NBA playoffs until Game 4 of the NBA Finals, finished 16-1. The second best team he faced in the NBA Finals was the 0-2 Lakers. Now, they weren't as good as the 0-1 Lakers, but you still had peak Shaq, near peak Kobe. That was an extraordinary team. The third best team he ever faced was the 16 Warriors. They looked like the best team in league history, but then the Thunder made them wobbly. And the worst team he faced by far was the 0-3 Spurs. That was the worst Spurs team of any of the five championship teams. You had David Robinson, but in name only, it was only 8 points a game that season. So I love you, RJ, but this is an abysmal list. It's an awful list, and you got every part of the list wrong. Wilds?
I mean, I cannot believe I'm saying this. I cannot believe I'm saying this. When I first saw this question, I was like, we're going to do this. I'm like, it's RJ's list. What are you talking about? Nick convinced me that RJ is wrong about his own list. He actually convinced me. I think Nick is right.
No, Nick is not right. Stop.
I'm telling you, it works.
Is Nick right? That is it. He's not right about this list. It's not his list. It's Richard Jefferson's list. It's what he experienced. How can you, Nick, tell him what team was better and he faced in the NBA Finals? You can't. Stop it.
I just did. I just did.
You guys
did tell him.
I agree with you, Greg. Nick, I loved Michael J. Fox, Danny Ainge, and Ricky Schroeder.
I love it.
My list. You can't tell me my list was wrong.
Oh,
RJ's
list. We have found a list worse than RJ's. Amazingly, RJ's worst list in the world. It lasted 30 seconds because Jenna has somehow come up with a worse list. I can't believe you lived through the 80s and you're like, my top three picks, Danny Ainge, Ricky Schroeder, and Michael J. Fox.
Michael
we found
J.
a worse
Fox.
List. Danny
just
Ainge.
Making a point. All right. We're moving on to the Nets now, quickly, a little bit.
Brian Windhorst is reporting that Brooklyn plans to use young talent to acquire a third star to pair with KD and Kyrie. Nick, who do you think rounds out the Nets' big three?
All right, so maybe it's Caris LeVert. Maybe it's someone they already have in-house. But if they've got assets to make this move now. LeVert's a very good player. Jared Allen is a good young cheap player who, by the way, has been elbowed out of the starting lineup by DeAndre Jordan. And don't forget about Spencer Dinwiddie. So this is a realistic proposition if they want to sacrifice depth and become top heavy. But if top heavy means they add Bradley Beal or CJ McCollum, oh man, that is a dangerous team. That should be the best offense in basketball. If you have KD, let's hope he's close to full strength, Kyrie doing Kyrie things, plus Bradley Beal or CJ, one of whom I imagine might be available this summer. Wilds, that would be scary for Milwaukee and Toronto and Philly and the up-and-coming, you know, hard-scrabble Boston Celtics you root for if you added a third legitimate star to that team, Wilds.
I always just wonder, is Portland ever actually going to move CJ? Like, I just don't, like, I was talking to my buddy who's a Blazers fan. He's like, this isn't our year, next year. Like, guys, we've been saying this since Clyde Drexler. Like, it's time to break up that team. And I would love to see CJ get on a great team. Sorry, Portland. I'd love to see CJ get on a great team. I'd love to see Bradley Beal get on a great team for, like, the all-star snub. I thought he was just, like, a great story. So I'm just happy if this happens. I don't totally believe in GM Kyrie. Like behind the scenes, but if they want to start moving guys, I'd like to see CJ or Bradley there. Greg?
Yeah, I don't know if CJ is going anywhere. I don't know if CJ even wants to go anywhere. He was back a few years ago talking about how he wanted to do it his way with Dame in Portland and win. So I don't know how hell-bent he is on getting out of Portland. Now, Bradley Beal is an interesting pickup if that were able to happen, because I think Bradley Beal is one of the best two guards in the National Basketball Association. He can shoot lights out. He can get his own shot up. You got KD. You got LeVert. You got to keep LeVert, in my opinion, Nick. He's the better of all their young talent. And obviously, if KD comes back 100% healthy, even if he's not 100% healthy, that's four guys that are very appealing for any NBA coach.
And listen, I would, that's the other point. It's a great point. They got to figure out who their coach is as well. Windhorst, who's the best in the, he's great at this. He also floated Drew Holiday, who maybe he could be on the move.
Yeah.
Jenna, I would be concerned if I'm Brooklyn at adding a 30-year-old Drew Holiday when I think Kyrie Irving's body is a little older than his actual biological age. And so I wouldn't break up this young core to add Holiday, even though I love him as a player and I love his story. But if you can get Beal or you can get CJ, I think you bite the bullet, even if it means you got to move LeVert, Jenna, and you see if you have the only big three there is in the NBA right now.
All right, let's move on to our final topic, a little golf. Haven't talked golf in a while, where Phil Mickelson is working on setting up a live streaming rematch with Tiger Woods. So, Greg, this had us thinking, what is the best one-on-one sports matchup you would want to see?
No-brainer. Give me Michael Jordan versus LeBron James. Now, it wouldn't eliminate the who's the GOAT. It wouldn't eliminate who's the GOAT, but it would just allow us to see into the psyche of both individuals on a one-on-one level. I just would want to see it happen.
I think Michael Jordan's probably too old to play LeBron one-on-one, but if there was time machines, Greg, I'm 100%
Michael Jordan
in with
is
you.
Prime. Stop it, Wilds.
I know. I actually want to see, I'd like to see King of the Court, LeBron, KD. The other caveat of this is they were talking about maybe Phil and Peyton and Tom Brady and Tiger, that might be a thing. It's like it's a foursome that goes out. So I'm in on any live sports that we can get.
All right, so we can do what we actually might be able to see. I would love to see a Mahomes-Aaron Rodgers old-school quarterback competition. Paint on the ends of the footballs, hit targets, see how far you can throw it. I think that would actually be really fun to see the two most talented arms. Dan Marino probably has an argument, but in NFL history, as far as contemporary NBA King of the Court, we know who that is. So if we just have to do a one-on-one, Giannis versus Harden after a little war of words that's quieted down, that could be fun. But I'm going to be honest, because I want to end the show on a high note. What I actually want to see, Jenna Wolf, what I want to see is Usain Bolt race animals of increasing difficulty. Like Usain Bolt races a greyhound, then he races a horse, then he races a snow leopard, and we see how high up the charts he can get. Bolt racing animals, that is must-see television when sports are
that
gone right now.
That I did not
answer.
See
That's
coming
a television show in
at
America.
All. We gotta go. We'll be back here tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. Hope you join us. Stay safe. Have a great day, everyone.